available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. As you know, we're live on YouTube. Thanks, everyone, for joining us in the chat there. And if we're on a regular podcasting platform. You can get us anywhere. You get your podcast, and we got a lot to get to, a lot of great games, epic weekend of Pac-12 football. I think it's my fifth show since that I left the
We're hearing
South
it.
Bend.
We're hearing it in your voice right now.
Literally, we did a show in the car on the way back, driving back from South Bend to Chicago. Did like two more on Sunday. This is my second one on Monday. A lot of shows, but a lot of great Pac-12 football this weekend, so we got to get to all that. Pac-12podcast at gmail.com is the email address, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. And tweet us over at Pac-12podcast, or the website is Pac-12podcast.com. And we do love...
Don't go there. You don't need to.
Okay. We just love when you guys are here.
We love you. We love
Thank you for
here.
Being here live. Thank you for listening to us wherever. And thank you for being Pac-12 football fans, at least for the next, I don't know, couple of months.
That's true. People are complimenting my haircut. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, you did get a haircut.
I did.
Yeah, looking good.
Thank you. It's a clean cut.
It's clean?
It's clean.
Yeah, it does look clean.
It's clean.
I like it.
What was noticeable when I got my haircut was exactly how much white and gray hair I have now.
Oh.
Because yeah, I thought it was isolated to the beard for the most part. No. No, sir. No. It was a lot of white hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan Dutter says, nice buzz, David. So
thank you very much.
That was very nice. So we got to recap what happened. I want to give you guys a little information. You got to do better than me over at my bookie. The last 2 weeks I've been taking an absolute bath. But I like that. This is my favorite place to put my money on the line. It's a trusted sports book. Gives you the tools to win like my bookie. I just need to take those tools and create something that wins, because the last 2 weeks have not been that. It doesn't matter if your team is up or down. You can easily cash out or bet the game live to come out on the winning side. You can use my bookie for daily odds boosts, games, same day parlays, and you can take advantage of their huge prize pool contests. They have a no strings attached cash bonus over at my bookie. You can deposit and withdraw quick. You can use the promo code, which is ours, Pac-12, for your first deposit. Get up to $200 in cash to claim your cash bonus right now. They also have this money bag grab where you could take like a Super Bowl front runner that would not have like long odds, and you kind of tweak it and you get to get the long odds. So if you want the Chiefs or the Eagles, you can do that over at MyBookie. You're not going to find odds like that anywhere else. So you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
And if I had a recommendation for you, the listener, on what you should bet on my bookie, strongly recommend my picks and not Ryan's picks.
Yeah.
Are you still over 500 for the year?
I am.
Barely?
How bad? I'm like barely over 500. We were both good. We were tied. And I've been really awful the last 2 weeks. But we were so good that I'm still over 500 for the awful one.
I'm still quite a bit over 500.
You are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is good. I do want to clip. I did have one completely right, and so it was funny. It's funny that we got our teams completely wrong, the teams we cover. That's good. I feel good about that. But it was crazy. It was a kind of a crazy weekend. A couple little notes. Did you see this stuff about, you know, there's still the lawsuit and everything going on?
I did.
Apparently, Kliavkov, under penalty of perjury, said UCLA and USC were removed as...
Yeah, I talked about this on Thursday's show.
the board of directors thingy?
Yeah, you may not remember.
No, I kind of remember that. But I thought that was funny. But also the $70 million now for Comcast instead of 50 or whatever it is. They had to drain the reserves. So I don't even know what they're fighting over now. Like, there's not much left in the Pac-12 coffers. They're still having lawyers like get out. I'm not sure what's
going on. There's a lot of people like buzzing, like Washington State and Oregon State are suddenly going to get picked up by the Big 12 too. Like, I don't know. Seems like still some things happening, maybe.
It could. I mean, they got to play games like next year. And I don't know. I mean, this is.
Taylor has a good question. Did Dave or the child Dave was with escape from the escape room? I did go to the escape room on Saturday. Thank you, Taylor, for the question. And I brought my daughter. It was a birthday party. And they did, in fact, escape from the escape room. But it was very funny to watch because all the parents are outside and it's all the kids and they're like 7 and 8 years old doing the escape room. And you're watching them. And it's insane to watch kids who have like very limited frontal lobe, like just no ability to like problem solve whatsoever, try to figure out something like an escape room. Like them going back and forth to like different locks and like trying to do teamwork. It's insane. One of the best experiences. Strongly recommend it. If you have a child, bring them. If you don't have a child, just show up. I'm sure it's creepy. Don't worry about it. Watch some kids try to solve an escape room.
The teamwork isn't quite there.
No, the teamwork was not making the dream work for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I've done it a couple of times. They're kind of fun.
Well, it's all about subsuming ego, you know, listening, all that stuff that, you know, 7-year-olds are famously good at. You know, like, I'm not the center of the universe. I should be listening to others,
particularly
my 7-year-old. You know, it's really good.
Nice. Okay, let's see. We got to get to – so did you even look at the power rankings? Take a look real quick.
Oh, you did power rankings. Look at you.
I mean, because you didn't do anything. So
Yeah. Well, I was busy. Okay, so Ryan has –
any issues? Take a look.
Yes, a big issue.
Which one?
Your number 4 team.
Where do you want them?
Honestly, I would have our number 7 team at number 4.
Really?
Yeah. It's power rankings. It's not like how good do you think this team is.
I mean, they lost to that team.
Who cares? They shouldn't have.
Well, they did. Like, I don't know.
Whatever. No, we're making this provocative. I'm doing it right now. Hang on.
No, you can't do that.
Why can't I do that?
Because they lost to that team.
Yeah, I can. It didn't happen last week, did it?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, who cares?
Okay. All right, fine. This is all on David. Come in. You want to keep the others the same?
That was the only one that really jumped out to me. You could talk me into nothing else. That's about right.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to do one other one.
Ooh.
You like that?
Wow, that's pretty good.
This is great radio for everyone.
So we have the team that's first place in in the Pac-12, not in the top half, according to David Woods.
That's damn right, buddy.
Okay, so we're going to go through our power rankings and we're going to recap all the games.
And we're on a firm time crunch today, everyone. So we've got a ton of questions and we've got to recap all these really awesome games. So we're going to be out of here at like 2:50.
All right.
Just an FYI.
So here we go. First one up.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
That's our number 12 team. They
sure did.
No big deal. Just recently moved down to our number 11 team.
California Golden Bears.
And they were on the road taking on our number 5 team.
Utah Utes.
How did we pick on this one? I feel like this was one that, like, was this one you got correct?
You got this one correct. Oh,
but it was like a narrow thing, right? Like they only
very narrow. Cal was up 7-0.
Oh, right. What was the final score? So I'm just looking at the final score.
They were covering in the fourth quarter.
I'm just looking at the final score. Hang on.
Yeah.
It says 34-14 Utah
over
Cal.
Yeah.
And it was in a 10 or 11 point spread?
It was 11.5.
Okay.
And
Covered it by a full touchdown.
But they were not covering in the fourth quarter.
Does that count for something for you?
It does, yes. Cal's collapse in the end.
Got it.
Utah never does that at the end. Utah never like extends a lead at the end.
Well, I think a big part of the problem for Cal was Ben Finley had to come into the game. And Ben Finley, if you needed further evidence for Justin Wilcox being a nincompoop, a ninny-headed dum-dum, It was watching Ben Finley come in and try to play as well as Fernando Mendoza had been playing before that and failing miserably. Fernando Mendoza might have had one of the better like quarterback performances against Utah this year before he had to leave the game. Run the ball okay. Wasn't making like horribly egregious mistakes. He did throw one interception, but he wasn't awful.
He had two touchdowns. He completed his first six passes.
Like, given what Utah has done to teams with their defense this year, that was okay. And then Ben Finley was 5 of 14 for 39 yards, which is, like, in fairness to Ben Finley, about what other quarterbacks do to Utah.
Cal covers if Mendoza stays in.
I think I agree.
I think Utah wins, but Cal covers.
The pig farmer was the pig farmer. He was doing pig farmery things. You know, what you're getting out of him is what, like, you know, you're getting baseline, borderline competent play. No egregious things. Nothing spectacular. But their run game was exceptional. Utah ran for over 300 yards. Sione Vaque, Jaquindon Jackson, both were really, really good. And even, I mean, Barnes himself, it's like because Nate Johnson wasn't available, they weren't accounting for a running quarterback, or because he wasn't starting, they weren't accounting for a running quarterback, but he was able to generate some yardage on the ground. Utah controlled the game on the ground, and once Mendoza went down, it was pretty much lights out for California.
Yeah, that was the sturdy
Golden Bear.
Sturdy Golden Bear fell miserably. I think Pig Farmer got hurt in the fourth quarter too, right?
Yeah,
both quarters got hurt. Cole Bishop got ejected for targeting. I don't know if they
did not overturn it on appeal, so he will have to miss the first half of the next game.
Okay,
yeah. And Kyle Whittingham referred to the decision as, quote, baffling.
Yeah, Utah 53 rushes, 22 pass attempts, so that kind of gives you an idea of what was going on there. Sione Vaque, this is from the Pac-12, 158 rushing yards are the most by a Pac-12 defensive back in a game on record. So,
hell yeah, buddy. I think they should just constantly do that. Just put safeties and just a new type of Utah player at running back all the time.
Yeah.
Try a defensive lineman. What the hell? Why not?
Yeah, that's the what it could work. Short yardage situations.
Yeah.
Utah ran 20 more plays than Cal, and they had the ball for almost 16 minutes longer. But this was, you know, Utah scored 10 points in the fourth quarter. Like, that's not very Utah-like in this one. But Cal, like, only one trip to the red zone. They didn't even score. They turned the ball over a couple of times. I don't think Mendoza was going to lead this team to a win, but it was close, you know, and you felt like it was going to continue to be that. Once he went out, it just seemed to be like, nothing. Jay Knott couldn't get anything going.
But once again, can we talk about Justin Wilcox's massively overrated reputation as a defensive coach?
Yeah, this was not a good defensive effort.
Like, Utah's offense has not been good. You let a safety run for 158 yards on you. You let a converted quarterback run for 94 yards on you. And you let Bryson Barnes. I mean, it wasn't like Bryson Barnes was like completely ineffective passing the ball. Like, you didn't force an interception. You didn't force him into, you know, serious mistakes. What were they trying to do? Like, were they trying to take away the run and force Bryson Barnes? Because that sure as hell didn't work. I mean, it's just when you've got that reputation for being a defensive head coach and then you just lay an egg against an offense that has been eminently stoppable this year.
Yeah.
Just bad, 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 bad. Justin Wilcox should be fired.
Two turnovers, 14 points for Utah. It's one of those ones where, like, we've seen Cal's offense, like, kind of shine. And Utah was really able to kind of like get him out of the rhythm, shut him down. Mendoza goes down. This one was done. So, oh, I forgot to. I think I have a picture. Do I have a picture? Did I get one of those? Maybe not. I didn't get one. Okay.
My baldness on this latest buzz is really showing through. Like, up here,
it's a little lighter there.
Oh man, it's just, look at how glistening it is right there. Everyone, I mean, I'm on a delay, so I can't really see what I'm doing right now. But I think I'm pointing at the right spot. Look how shiny it is. Where my hair used to be. That's nuts, man.
It's a little nutty. Okay. Sorry about that.
Sorry about my baldness.
What am I going to do, you know?
Yeah, you can't fix
it. Okay. This one was one of the crazier ones. We got number 10.
Mm-hmm. Stanford Cardinal.
Should we swap these? I mean, since it just happened, I guess. But
no, God, no.
Number 9.
Colorado Buffaloes.
For a couple reasons. I mean, first, like, even with the massive comeback, Stanford probably shouldn't have won this game.
You think?
But Okay, so my theory of this game. So Stanford won famously in double overtime, 46-43. My theory of this game is Colorado was up 29-0 at halftime, and they literally were like taking shots in the locker room or something. Like came out just like, oh, we've got this in the bag. Stanford is an absolute trash football team. We're done. And just completely stopped playing. Do you dispute that theory at all?
No. I think it's happened. I mean, it just – we're in Chicago at a little meetup, you know, pregame, whatever, Friday night. It's on the TV, and I'm like thinking, okay, first cover. That's good. We covered this one. Colorado's running away with it. And then it just like fell apart. But yeah, I think everyone just – people turned it off. Like it was just over.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what the players from Colorado did too.
So there were a lot of things in this game. The most funny of which was the star receiver for Stanford in this game was this guy, Elik Ayomanor, who had 294 yards receiving.
Like in the second half or something.
Insane. And you must think, oh, of course, that guy, he must have been a star player in games before this one, right? Like maybe their sole target on this bad offense. He had 207 yards in the entire season before this game. Like it was almost a kind of what Omarion Miller did two or three weeks ago against USC. It was like the version of that, except this guy was like doing things that we've all seen Stanford do to UCLA specifically in the last decade of just like there was a catch where he caught the ball. Was it on Travis Hunter's back? I can't remember.
I think it was.
Where he caught the ball and he had to wrap his arms around the cornerback. I think it was Travis Hunter.
I think I got the picture there. If you're watching on YouTube, look at it.
Yeah, look at it. You'll like it. He completely, like, I think destroyed Carter Stoutmeyer's, like, ability to be an effective player this year. Like, his confidence was so shot in this game, I thought he was going to self-pull himself out of the game. It was insane to watch. Ayomanor was absolutely incredible. He had one 97-yard touchdown from the three where he caught this little thing. And then the thing is I'll fight you. but he looked really fast, too. On top of everything else, he looks really fast. So anyway, all of that being said, Colorado still should have won this game. They made some real boneheaded plays in the late stages of this game. You had Shedeur Sanders taking bad sacks. You also had this bizarre, absolutely bizarre decision to punt from the Stanford 41 on a 4th-and-3 with a little over 3 minutes to
go. That was weird.
They take the false start, or they take the delay of game and then punt it, and they get it out at the one. But you never do that. Your defense is terrible. It's been terrible. It's been like just getting like trucked this entire second half. Again, they just gave up a 97-yard touchdown from the three. Getting him down to the one, okay, it's two extra yards for Ayomanor to run. Who cares? they did that, and it's just if they had decided to go and they made it, they end the game on offense. Instead, they punt it away, allow Stanford to drive down and score. And of course, Stanford being Stanford, I mean, even with a new coach, it's still Stanford. It's still got that inherent conservatism. So they basically play for a field goal at the end of it and kick the 46-yarder to tie it instead of going for it. But then, in overtime, they make the same mistake they made against Colorado State, which is they elect to go first.
Yeah,
they don't elect to defer. They don't elect to do any of that. They elect to go first, which means Stanford can go second in each overtime. Stupid.
Each one.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you've just watched Stanford just score at will on you constantly the entire second half. You have to go for two in that first overtime. And I know you're not going second, but you have to do it. You have to put some pressure on that Stanford offense. Otherwise, you're going to lose the game. And naturally, they lost the game.
They lost it.
And they lost it because Shedeur Sanders made a horrible decision, throwing off his back foot into, complete coverage. Just dirt that ball and kick the field goal, man.
Yeah, and then Stanford. All Stanford had to do was kick the field goal at the end. Did you like it when they just kicked? It was like 1st-and-10. And they're just like, oh, we'll just kick it.
Yep.
I thought they might.
Yeah, no, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought that was ridiculous. It was a very conservative play, and Josh Carty had already missed a pretty makeable field goal in the game. So all of that seemed bizarre to me. I thought that was, again, like very David Shaw-y decision-making.
Right.
So maybe it's just an infection of Stanford coaches generally that they have to do stupid stuff. But yeah, I thought they should have just continued to run and put the ball in the end zone.
Yeah. This was crazy. Just to see, like, the comeback is absolutely insane. It's the largest Stanford comeback in program history, fourth largest in Pac-12 history, largest blown lead in program history for the Buffs. Ayo Minor, so he set a program record, 294 receiving yards. All of them came after halftime. all like, what? Like, insane.
It made Ashton Daniels look really good, and Ashton Daniels has not been really good this year.
It's the second most yards by a Pac-12 player in conference history. Marquise Lee had 345 against Arizona back in 2012. Most receiving yards by an FBS player since Jackson Smith and Jigba had 347 against Utah in the Rose Bowl, which is crazy.
Yeah, and Colorado, it just seemed like they stopped. Like, we've got this game in the bag and we're done, and Stanford wasn't. So you got to give, we're making a lot of fun. You got to give Stanford a ton of credit to go in on the road, make that massive comeback. I think that's the kind of thing that if you're a new head coach, you can build on that. Like, we showed the fight and the commitment to come back 29 down on the road. I don't know if it fuels them the rest of the year. I don't know if they've got another win in them, but that's the kind of stuff that you can, you know, point to when you're a year from now trying to make a bowl game. You can say, we did that.
Yeah. Colorado scored a touchdown on each of the first four drives. It's the most points they've ever scored in a home loss. So that's kind of a weird one. Travis Hunter got burned sometimes, but he had 13 catches for 140 yards, two touchdowns.
The problem was they had nobody at cornerback who was doing anything to Iamanor. But he wasn't good on defense, Travis Hunter.
No, but I mean, he had a huge offensive day.
Yeah, receiver, he was awesome. And I think while he's working himself back in, maybe just play him at receiver.
Yeah.
That's a question for maybe another day, but is he better at receiver than he is at cornerback, or is he just... From a pro perspective, I know cornerback can be a more unique and valuable position, but that's going to be an interesting conversation for him because he's a really talented receiver.
Yeah. And we both got this wrong. Again, covering and then not covering. That's been the story of my picks.
Story of your picks, yes. For
really
sure.
Good shape.
For the longest time, this was my only loss of the weekend.
For a while. Yeah. All right. Next up, we have our number 8 team.
Washington State Cougars.
And they're hosting what should have been a pretty easy game. Now our number 4 team, according to David Woods.
Arizona Wildcats.
That's right, baby. But surely Arizona must have been favored, right? They didn't cover this by a ton, right?
No, they were not favored. They were like an 8-point underdog or something.
Oh, so you're saying they covered this by 46 points? Well, certainly us being Pac-12 experts, we both must have gotten this one correct, at least.
I don't think we both did.
Huh. I'm trying to remember my pick. I think I took Arizona in those points.
But I think you did.
Are you sure you didn't?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Wow. Wow.
Washington State scored to start.
That's true. They were up.
They tried to do the Oregon and do like the 2-point conversion thing.
Yeah. So Arizona, you know, you made this argument, and like I treated it like it was invalid, but I think it is a fair argument before the game that they might have shot their wad a little bit against Washington and then USC.
Apparently not.
Playing two top 10 teams. They lose both of those, so you might be thinking they're a little demoralized. Nope. it's like they took out every little bit of frustration they had from those games, from losing, you know, in overtime to USC, losing a close one to Washington, even losing that overtime game to Mississippi State in the early part of the year, and they just brought it. I think they were aided, obviously, by Jaden Delora maybe not being healthy enough to start, and so Noah Fifita was given the start again by Jed Fish. And he's so clearly superior, was once again so clearly superior in this game. Huge part of why they won. He didn't throw a touchdown, but just managing that offense up and down the field. The run game for Arizona was incredible. And then Washington State, I mean, so I think Arizona did get the blueprint a little bit from UCLA as to how to defend Washington State. It's kind of the classic air raid defense where you rush 3, rush 4, drop 7, drop 8. And that worked again. Cam Ward, once again, sort of like he did against UCLA, looked flustered, looked out of sorts and struggled. And they also weren't able to run the ball. I think not respecting the Washington State run game is an important part of the recipe for success against Washington State's offense. And now they're going to have to adjust. There aren't too many ways to talk about a big-ass blowout like this, but I think for Arizona's purposes, look, they still have a very, very, very tough schedule. They still have to play Oregon State. They have to play UCLA. They have to go at Colorado. They have to play Utah, and then it's at Arizona State to end the year. It is not a given that they're going to make a bowl. Still not. But this was a necessary component of a bowl picture for them. They got it, and now it's, you know, can they beat one of Oregon State and UCLA at home? Can they beat Colorado on the road? Can they beat Arizona State on the road? And the team we've watched the last, well, hell, the last 7 weeks of football, I think they can. Question is, will they?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's this was really shocking. I don't think anybody, it didn't matter what you picked. Like, no one expected 44 straight points.
Oh, boy.
From the Wildcats. You're like, what? Okay. Yeah, that was pretty nuts. It's funny. Washington State scores early. They go for two, like Oregon style, don't get it. And they tried a trick play. I forget what the trick play was, but they tried like a trick play very early on.
Yeah.
It backfired. And then it just sort of gave, it just seemed to light a fuel under the Fighting Jed Fishes. I mean, piano dropped on his head, concussion protocol, all that didn't matter. Arizona just like, I feel like Washington State sort of screwed around early. Not like Colorado level screw around at halftime, but it seemed like they were going to be in control, and then just they couldn't get it back. They just lost it, and it was gone. They only had that one trip to the red zone, you know, and it's like they score the first points in 44 straight for Arizona. Arizona converted 10 of 17 third downs. Like, they were really – I thought, you know, the efficiency on offense was really good. Fafita didn't throw any touchdowns, but he didn't turn the ball over. 34 of 43, so – it's pretty impressive what he was able to do. Three rushing touchdowns for Jonah Coleman. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where they looked like a well-coached team. They looked like they didn't it didn't matter that they lost these heartbreakers to Washington and USC back-to-back. It was like they were coming out and they were going to, like, take it out on somebody. And the Cougs, I think UCLA broke the Cougs because, like, there's – I thought this team would be a lot better. There was a really impressive win they had earlier in the season against Oregon State. But, man, they've laid a couple of eggs. And I've had faith in them, and they have not delivered the last couple of weeks. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, and I don't think it's as simple as they broke them. I think it was they exposed a way to defend them that maybe Washington State going into Arizona didn't think Arizona was capable of it the same way that UCLA was. But now Washington State really has to adjust, because if they're unable to run on a – really, really light box, they can't keep defenses honest, and Cam Ward is forced to try to throw into, you know, 7 and 8 man coverages, they're going to look really bad down the stretch.
Yeah.
So they need to make some adjustments. And it's going to be a test for their Wunderkind offensive coordinator.
Yeah. 11 drives for the Cougs. Only three of them ended up in Arizona territory. Like, they could not.
Arizona had three total punts in this game, or two total punts in this game.
Yeah, how crazy is that?
That's nuts.
Someone in the chat, Eric said that Arizona does not have the best defense in the league, but they're probably third. Like, where their defense is up there, though, right? Like, they limited, you know, one touchdown pass to what? Penix, Caleb Williams, and Cameron Ward combined. Like, that's pretty
good. Yeah, I mean, they're good. They're opportunistic. They have had some really good games against some good teams. So I think they're certainly improved.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Next up, we have number 7, according to David.
USC Trojans.
Playing against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
You gotta do
Give me my pot of gold. I don't know. That wasn't very good.
That's good. You always go with a pot of gold.
So, Ryan.
Yes.
Notre Dame, they had lost pretty bad to Louisville the previous week, right?
They did.
So losing by 28 to USC, that made sense, right? What?
Oh, shit.
Sorry, I misread this. Wait. Are you saying a team that lost to Notre Dame and Ohio State beat USC by 4 touchdowns?
Wait. Now you're confusing me.
Was Caleb Williams hurt?
No, he was in there.
God, did Marshawn Lloyd get hurt?
No, he played. He didn't play as much, though. They put in Austin Jones more.
Did all of their receivers go down, USC's?
Nope, they were there.
Okay. But they lost by 28 points to Notre Dame?
They lost by 28 points.
Wow.
Five turnovers. Kickoff return for a touchdown.
Well, it's tough. I mean, when you're rebuilding a program, you're in year two. It's tough. I mean, you have these growing pains where you're trying to build something. And I think, you know, for USC, the big thing is, were they competitive? And they weren't. But, you know, did they try hard? Can you tell me that?
Didn't seem to try very hard.
Oh, well, I'm just trying to search for a silver lining, but it sounds like Ryan wants to be very negative about the Trojans. So USC got that ass beat really hard, and it was basically from kickoff to the end. Like, it wasn't like Notre Dame let up at any point. Caleb Williams was really bad. It was probably his worst game as a Trojan.
For sure.
He threw three picks. They were all kind of bad. Like, they weren't like, I'm getting hit and I'm throwing it away. Like, one was, he lofted one of those balls where you typically, the first one was, and it just lofted right over his intended receiver directly into the waiting arms of a safety. Did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
He was just off. And it was, if you've been watching closely, I mean, against Arizona, he got better as the game went on, but he started the game kind of very similar to the way he started the game against Notre Dame. It just never really changed. He was bad from the beginning, bad throughout. And USC decided to, you know, not run the ball with their best running back very often, which was interesting. It was a choice.
He was kind of – so Marshawn Lloyd, when he was coming in, he was sort of going sideways and not – and they weren't blocking where the offensive line was terrible. I think there was yards to be had going forward. He kind of ran himself out of plays, and I think they kind of benched him for it. But I think he's their best running back.
Well, Austin Jones was no better.
I mean, he was kind of getting north and south.
Yeah, he was getting north and south to the tune of 2.5 yards per carry.
Yeah, no, they were not being blocked well. It was, yeah. This was a game, they actually tried to run the ball more. Like, they were really running the ball against Arizona State, and they didn't do it. Like, they were just like, oh, Marshawn Lloyd, every time you touch it, it's like 11 yards. We just won't give it to you that much. But they were trying to run the ball here, and it was not effective.
Yeah, and the shocking thing was, and what made this actually like, oh boy, what if things had been worse? Alex Grinch's defense played pretty well.
Yeah, there's Taylor's like, hey, extend Alex Grinch 251 yards.
Yeah, Notre Dame, they weren't really moving it that well. You know, Estime's a good running back. Their running game's pretty good, and holding them to 4.3 yards per carry is not bad.
He had 22 rushes and didn't get to 100 yards.
Yeah. So now. You gotta go per play averages, because Notre Dame only ran 49 plays, so it's not like holding a really, really explosive and like up tempo offense to 251 yards, but it's still pretty darn good result for what had been a very embattled defense. Like, imagine if it had been like the typical Alex Grinch showing. This would have been a biblical blowout instead of something that was not respectable. That's not the right word for it, but at least something in the rain. Like, there was a possibility coming out of the third quarter that USC could make a comeback. If Grinch's defense had been doing its usual thing through the first three quarters, that would not have been a possibility.
Yeah, I think after halftime, USC, they got two stops. Notre Dame got the ball back.
Yep.
He gets the ball, gets a stop. USC goes three and out. Like, they could have responded and cut it to 11. They don't. They get a stop again, and then USC responds. And they added 11 twice, and then they gave up a drive, and then they gave up a kickoff return for a touchdown. So it was like they could have like ugly won the game somehow.
Special teams, baby.
Special teams are so bad.
All right. So all that being said, you know, I was sort of joking about it last week, but like, there are so many strong like late stage UCLA head coach vibes with what Lincoln Riley is doing there. Like, losing a game like this in a blowout is insane. Like, I don't know. Like, he's what, 17-4 now?
17-4, yeah.
But this was the first, like, actually difficult opponent of the year. Well, let's actually revise that, because Arizona may have been.
Yeah.
Because Arizona might end up being a top 25 team at some point this year if they keep playing the way they are. They should have lost that one. They got blown out in this one. Like, what is the temperature going to be around Lincoln Riley? over the next five games if things don't change, because they need to change pretty drastically from what the team has performed like the last two games.
I'm baffled by this, David. We are getting Lincoln Riley, like, feels like Clay Helton vibe, like on the peristyle over at USCfootball.com. It is bizarre. Like, you hire a guy like that, he's 40 years old, you know? He's accomplished, like, way more than Nick Saban did at this point in his career. He might not be, like, the greatest coach in the world. He could be very good. He could be, like, okay. But he's done so much already in a young career. I think you hire someone like that and you're just like, well, do it. You know, figure it out. Okay, you screwed up this. Fix it and go forward and do, you know.
But what about that weird interview he gave to, I think, Karchi last week? Was it to Karchi or was it to everybody? Or, and he just quoted about it in a story, like how he, like, wants to retire at 50 and all that kind of shit.
Oh, that was like a sit down with some, I don't know if he might have did some of the LA Times too, but he did one earlier and he had mentioned that.
Like, my feeling on that is, like, you're supposed to be like a 40-year-old ass kicker who's gonna, like, dominate college football for the next 20 years. Why are you even talking about retirement?
I need you to help me with this one. So, like, sure. West Texas Mike, all caps, Lincoln Riley right now feels like Clay Helton. Okay. Like,
so, all right. Let me, I'm going to help Ryan here, because I'm going to get out of the trolling mindset for a second. Clay Helton is a classic UCLA head coach in that, like, sometimes it accidentally goes right, but for the most part, it's going to go wrong. You're going to have losing seasons. What you will never have with Lincoln Riley, you could have him for the next decade. You're never going to have a losing season, because that offense is too damn good. But I do have legitimate questions about him as a program manager in the medium to long term. I think there are some deficiencies that are noticeable in, obviously, the defense, potentially in special teams, potentially in all the details other than offense. But you can't put him in the same category as Clay Helton. If you want to judge results and say, well, Clay Helton got blown out at Notre Dame and Lincoln Riley just did too, okay, fine, that very narrow argument. But if you're looking at the broad-based success of the program, no. I mean, like, come on. It's a different thing. And, you know, I think even looking at the rest of the season and me being probably quite a bit more skeptical than Ryan is about the overall quality of this team, I still think you're probably looking at worst, they're going to beat Cal for sure. I think they're almost certainly going to beat Utah this weekend. At worst, they're going 9-3 this year. At absolute worst. And I think they're probably taking one of Washington, Oregon, and UCLA. So that should put you in 10-2 range. And if you're complaining this hard after 10-2 and after 11-3, was it last year?
Yeah.
I mean, 21-5 through 2 years. Look, and that's not to say that you can't identify warts. That's not to say that you can't even.
Yeah,
if you're one of those like guys who likes to be a prognosticator and you might say, look, I think this tenure is going to be a failure and this is why. That's also valid at that point.
Sure.
Because that's two seasons with the best player in college football where you don't even make a playoff would be the result there. But not everything is analogous. Not everything is exactly like another situation that you've experienced in the past. Like, UCLA fans do this, oh, this is exactly like Rick Neuheisel. No, it fucking isn't. Nothing is exactly like Rick Neuheisel. Nothing.
They didn't have gloves, dude.
Right. this isn't exactly like Clay Helton. It's not even going to be remotely in the same failure class as Clay Helton. It's not going to set the program back. It's not going to require a situation where you hire a new guy and then also bring in like 25 transfers in the first year. It's not going to be that.
Yeah.
But it could still fail because things happen.
Sure. I mean, it's just kind of baffling. People just throw this into like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And like, not realizing how bad things were like 2 years ago. They were not nationally relevant, and they are now.
All right, so West Texas,
they can't win a national championship. Like, Jesus, they couldn't win a game before.
I don't want to get into too much debating the comments. West Texas Mike's, I really don't know if Lincoln Riley knows how to manage a game. Have you heard us talk about the head coaches in the Pac-12? I'm not sure any of these guys have taken a math class past like seventh grade. None of them know how to manage a game. Chip Kelly was we're going to get to this in a second, but I got to start now, was down 13 points in the beginning of the fourth quarter after a touchdown and decided to kick an extra point instead of going for two. Just do the math. Literally count it on your fingers. Is that the right decision? No. Nobody knows. Everyone's stupid. We're all just getting through it. But with everyone being dumb, right, with every one of these coaches being dumb, we did our dumb rankings last week. With every one of these coaches being dumb, being a game manager, would it be an asset? Sure, it'd be great. But all these guys are idiots. And the one who's not an idiot, my man Dan Lanning, calls idiotic plays on all the fourth downs that he absolutely should go for. He's correct in going for them, but then he calls pass plays. Run the friggin' ball.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about other games now.
All right. We got to move on to our next game. But yeah, fun stuff. Good. Thank you, everyone, for that. Let's see. We have our number six. Wait, did we do this already? No. Our number six team.
UCLA Bruins.
And they went up where Pac-12 programs go to die. Number three team.
Oregon State Beavers.
You
wanna,
the one pick I got right.
You want to talk about bone stupid game plans?
I want to play that clip. All right. I said they're going to beat that ass.
First, I'm going to do some mea culpas up front. Oregon State won 36-24. DJU was very good. Very, very good. And I'm going to stop talking shit about him. and their run game was very good, and their offensive line beat UCLA's defensive line's ass.
Okay.
Second point. This was still a winnable game for UCLA if Chip Kelly didn't have the epidemic of pianos falling on coaches' heads prior to the game. When he decided on a game plan against Oregon State's abysmal run defense that entailed Dante Moore throwing 9 passes to 3 total carries for the offense through the first 3 series of the game. Do you know what the result of 2 of those series were for UCLA?
What happened?
Interceptions.
Ah.
Yeah.
I saw a few of those.
It was 13-0 before the offense really had a chance to do anything because they simply would not run the ball. Oregon State's rush defense was bad. It's still bad because we learned over the final 3 quarters that UCLA absolutely could have and should have been running the ball from the beginning because, oh, wait, what did they finish with? 287 yards on 51 carries. But they just didn't run the ball in the first half, in the first quarter. Dante Moore threw 3 interceptions. He threw it in his 3rd straight game. He threw a pick six. So that's Utah, Washington State, Oregon State. He's throwing a pick six in each game. You're not going to consistently win if you keep throwing pick sixes. UCLA still found a rhythm in this game. They were down 23-10 at halftime because of the pick six. But they were driving. They were moving the ball. Going into the second half, the game plan was obvious. You just got to run the ball.
Yeah.
They brought in Colin Schley. He did some things at running.
I saw that and I was like, what?
He did some things at quarterback running the ball where this could really work. This makes sense.
Then he had huge runs. It was crazy.
Then he broke his sternum.
Did he really?
Yes. But he was running all over the place. He had 80 yards and 6 carries.
Well, maybe the quarterback shouldn't do that all the time. But
probably not. Yeah. But Carson Steele was really good. TJ Harden was really good. Keegan Jones was really good. Everybody was able to run the ball on this defense. And still they were calling passes. Dante Moore was bad. Just straight bad. There was nothing that they could really do about that. And then late in the game, Chip Kelly had 2 opportunities down, again, going into a touchdown, down by 13. And each time he elected to kick an extra point instead of going for 2, which would have narrowed the deficit to 11. Mm-hmm. Why did this matter? They score with, let me get the exact time just to kind of really, really nail this one. They scored with 14:31 to go in the fourth quarter to make the score 36-23. They kicked the extra point instead of going for 2. If they'd gone for 2 and gotten it, it would have been 36-25. On the ensuing possession. So, all right. Everyone's thinking, well, you got 2 possessions left there, right? You should be fine. You still got to get stops, right? But here's the thing. UCLA in this game, every time they drop back to pass, disaster. Like, just absolute disaster. You cannot have a passing attack in this game. So the drive where you score is going to have to be a drive that's dominated with the run.
So you need
what
time.
Happens when you run the ball?
Yeah,
time comes off the clock. So you have to figure you're going to need to score on your running drive because 2-minute drill, you know what's going to happen? Dante Moore might throw another pick six because that's when he threw the pick six in the first half.
Yeah.
So anyway, they then run the ball down. And they get it to the Oregon State 16, and they've got a 4th and 8. If the deficit was 11 points, what can they do on 4th and 8?
They could kick a field goal.
Right. And it was about 6 minutes to go in the game. So you still have the potential that you still have all 3 of your timeouts. Either you call timeouts 3 times and you stop them 3 and out on the next drive, or you have timeouts left for your offensive drive, right?
Yeah.
Instead, they can't kick a field goal because they're down by 9, or they're down by 12 instead of
11.
Instead of 11. Hmm. And so they have to go for the touchdown. They try to go for it on 4th and 8, false start. They try to go for it on 4th and 13, false start. But before that, they call a timeout on a dead ball. And then they have to go for it on 4th and 18 from the Oregon State 26, which naturally doesn't work out well.
Yeah.
Dante Moore takes a sack. Game is over at that point.
Yes.
Like, there is no way you're coming back from that. And it was just hopelessly mismanaged football. That's what it was. You know what your quarterback is going into that game. You saw him against Utah. You saw him against Washington State. You have to imagine he's going to struggle. How in God's name do you build a game plan like that? And how do you not eke out as many advantages as you can in game management along the way?
I agree. Taylor says, lots of bros want more benched, but the schedule is getting easier and UCLA essentially eliminated from the championship game. What's the harm in playing him? Do you agree? You think he should be benched?
I would bench him at this point. He's been so, and I it's not even just benching him for the team's sake. I think you bench him for his sake. He's out there. He's not seeing things well. I think it's destroying his confidence. I mean, he's doing things that like a very shaky walk-on would do in games. And it's bordering on not just true freshman stuff, but like a guy who is like slowly eroding in his confidence in playing the position. It doesn't serve anyone for him to continue going out there and struggle. So for me, I would kick the tires on Ethan Garber, see if he really wants to redshirt or if he's down to come in and start again. I would look at Justin Martin, the redshirt freshman, because he's not burning anything by playing this year. I would look at a lot of different guys. I don't know if I'd drop as far as like looking at Chase Griffin, but why not? I think there's limited value in continuing to play him. I think, and it might not be like you need to bench him the rest of the year, but I'd bench him a game and just let him watch it from the sideline, see somebody else do it and not struggle.
And then, yeah.
And then maybe that gives you some, I don't know, some ability like, okay, I see now how they can do this. Let me figure it out on my own.
No, I agree with you there. UCLA ran, I mean, the offense was pretty efficient, right? They ran 85 plays to Oregon State's 54.
If they had just run the ball, man. I mean, it really came down to that, which is they couldn't pass the ball, and it was way too much time at the beginning of the game spent passing the ball. If they run the ball from the beginning of the game, I think this is a 50-50 coin flip.
They were 8 of 16 on third down, so it's pretty impressive for the Bruins. DJ, like you mentioned, 14 of 24, 266 yards, couple of touchdowns. Damian Martinez, 6 yards a carry, you know, it's okay, 90 yards. You know, Silas Boland had a 87-yard day with a receiving touchdown. Like, you know, I thought Oregon State did fine.
Yeah.
They didn't do great in the red zone. They've not been – I thought they could be better in the red zone.
They're a great red zone team. UCLA is a great red zone defense, and that's the one area where UCLA's defense actually played well. But I will say this. Oregon State forced a lot more busts in UCLA's defense than anyone else has this year, and it was the worry coming in. They're so balanced that you can't really cheat. Washington State, you can cheat. You can't really cheat against Oregon State because they can hit you with the pass. DJU, for any other warts he may have, he can hit a long ball. And they can run the ball really well. When you have those two things working, the best defenses will struggle. And I think UCLA is, you know, maybe not in that top 10 thing that we were thinking after the Washington State game.
Do you remember we first started doing the show and there would be like, it was like, which one's worse? Like Colorado would play Oregon State and you're like, which team is the worst? You know?
Yeah.
Third straight season, bowl eligibility for the Beavs.
So that's right, baby.
Pretty good
Go
there.
Beavs.
Pretty good for the Beavs. Okay. We had that. Let's see. UCLA. Well, next up, did we do this one? No, we did Utah, right? We already did. No, we haven't.
Yeah, we've done Utah.
Yeah, we've done Utah.
We haven't done Oregon and Washington. That's the only one we have.
Okay. So, yeah. So, we had 5 Utah, 4 Arizona, 3 Oregon State. Our number 2 team, they dropped a spot for some reason.
Oregon Ducks.
And our number 1 team,
Washington Huskies.
So I sort of watched this game because this was peak Maze time or Magic, whatever, the escape room.
Escape room.
So I watched the end of this game live and then I went back and watched the whole thing. So I was kind of detached from the conversation about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep my comments relatively narrow. First, it was an awesome game. Super great. I thought both teams did their thing pretty well. I would actually say on balance, Oregon was a little bit better, even though they lost the game. Washington State ended up – or Washington. Washington ended up winning 36-33. I want to talk about the fourth downs. Because this is something that has dominated the conversation.
Punt.
I really want to make this point clear. They were right in every situation to go for it.
Okay.
The decisions in terms of the play call on each of those fourth downs should get somebody fired. I don't know who.
Yeah.
I don't know when, but that should be the case. But each one of those was correct. I think other people have made the point pretty eloquently in various written pieces, but the final decision to go for fourth and three from about midfield was such a smart choice in terms of, again, the macro decision to go for it, because there's enough time left in the game that if you don't get it, Washington's scoring pretty quickly. So you'll have another shot at it to actually win the game in regulation. If you get it, you win the game. There's the decision tree isn't as simple as if we don't get it, we're opening ourselves up for a loss, because Washington is not really that offense designed to, from midfield, take what would it have needed to be 3 minutes off the clock to score. So there was a lot of like,
yeah, they scored a lot faster than that.
Yeah. They scored
which was kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah. They scored in two plays.
Yeah.
So there was some good decision-making on like a macro level. Again, the play calls were bad. And you know, putting the ball in Bo Nix's hands, I understand you're thinking best player, but their running game was just, I mean, they should know by now that their strength as a football team is running the football, and on big downs, just run the ball. I mean, even up fourth and three, you're probably going to get it. Like, you're probably going to get it, because on fourth and three, there's enough optionality that the defense has to account for that they're not going to stack like eight guys at the line of scrimmage. They're going to have to spread out and cover some things. So, but that's like nitpicky stuff on the play call. But the decisions to go each time were right. And yes, you can nitpick and say, well, Oregon would have won if they just kicked two field goals on those plays. I'm like, yeah. And they also would have won if one of these fourth downs that you're typically expecting to convert, like they get more than 3 yards per play, I think on 70% of plays was the stat I saw quoted. You're expecting to convert those 70% of the time, and instead you got them 0% of the time.
Yeah.
If you convert any one of those, this game is an Oregon win. So, all that said, Washington's really damn good. Both of these teams are really damn good. I would pay to watch this over and over and over again until the heat death of the universe. Phoenix was incredible. It was just a really good game. And now Washington is definitely in the driver's seat for a playoff berth if they can continue winning. But Oregon is also not ruled out, because they played a very close and competitive game on the road. And if they win out, they will almost certainly get a rematch with Washington in the Pac-12 title game.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things where someone had to lose, but both teams have all, you know, everything's still alive for both teams, which is good. And earlier, you know, most Pac-12 years, that would have been the case. You don't have any margin for error. These teams did. That's why this is the first time they've met as top 10 teams and undefeated. I mean, it was pretty impressive. I agree. Yeah, I don't have the problem with the decision to go for it on all those situations. I did have, you know, it, but it's one of those things where, yeah, if you call a normal play, are you doing something weird because it's an important down? They were really effective other ways, and then on those important critical downs, they weren't. So I'm not sure what's going on there. You don't really complain about play calling or whatever, yeah. But Washington has the second longest active home winning streak in the FBS with 13 straight wins. Pretty good for
and Kalen DeBoer,
he's good.
He's a boss. Are you still Lincoln Riley's better? Where are we on that now?
Well, just for 1 week. So if you want to say like right now overall, I mean, he doesn't have the resume that Lincoln Riley has, but right now he's.
What do you mean by the resume? He's coached for 9 years as a head coach. It's just five of them were at Sioux Falls.
Right. So you're as much, you know. But I think now, like, if you're going to draft, there's a legit reason you'd want to take Kalen DeBoer. I mean, it's pretty impressive what he was able to do at Fresno State and now at Washington. You got to finish the season and see how that goes. But it's
totally
been really impressive with what he's been able to do.
Yeah.
And like you said, he's won everywhere he's been. But this is, you know, what, three or four seasons in FBS level.
And we've talked a lot about, like, teams having very tough roads the rest of the way. Washington's is, you know, there's a couple of games here for sure, but it's manageable. Like, they have ASU, they go at Stanford the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so you have like two kind of bad teams.
And then Utah at home, unless something happens with that offense, I'm struggling to see how they are super competitive at home, you know, again, in Seattle.
I mean, USC, Utah, Oregon State, Washington State, you know, it's like.
Yeah. And I think
all teams that can.
At USC and at Oregon State, those are the ones where it'll be challenging.
Yeah.
But that's two real games they have left. I think Washington State and Utah at home, they'll be comfortable favorites.
No, I think you're right there. You know, Bo Nix, 75% of his passes completed. You know, he's definitely more of like the underneath kind of thrower guy. But he had a really good connection with Troy Franklin. He had 154 yards receiving in this one. Bucky Irvin, I thought, looked great. I mean, you like him running the ball, right? He looked really good.
Yep.
But Dylan Johnson, I think, looked really good too. You know, wide receiver room for Washington. Doesn't matter who gets hurt. You can kind of cycle three people through. Just really impressive. Washington had this game. They were up 11. You felt like they were in control. And Oregon gets some stops. A couple three and outs, I believe, for Washington. Then you're like, then Oregon had control and had a stranglehold on the game. And then that fourth down stop. And then even then, like you mentioned, if you don't get it, Washington's probably going to score quick enough that you could get the ball back. And that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
And they, I couldn't believe they scored in two plays. I'm like, at least take a little time off the clock, but you're going to score, you're going to score, whatever. And then the 43-yard field goal at the end. Oregon had a legit shot to tie this game, and I think it deserved to go to overtime. So it was a little disappointing that the kick missed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Even though they've kind of destroyed college overtime by making the stupid two-point conversions matter.
Yeah.
But.
Alas. But it was good. It was some good stuff. Okay. Well, forgot to mention at the top, too, the survival pool results. I am now out.
Yeah.
You're still in.
I am still in.
There were only 40 people are left because a lot of people had Colorado to beat Stanford. 29. It took a largest whatever comeback ever. 11 people had Washington State as 8.5-point favorite or whatever. Okay, 8-point favorite. And then someone picked UCLA. So most people had Utah, one Washington, one Oregon State. Two underdogs had won this week, but nobody picked them. Of the 40 remaining players, 20 have picked neither Stanford or Arizona State, so they're going to have some tough ones coming up. And the first team unavailable to pick for the rest of the season is Utah's. Everyone has picked Utah. So no more Utah's going forward. Our resident expert in playing it too safe, Justin Redding, he has thus far not taken Stanford, Arizona State, Cal, or Arizona. He picked Washington State in this one, and that did not work out. So only four games next week. Arizona, Cal, and Colorado are all sitting out. So one is USC, Utah, if you're going to pick the favorite there. Washington, half the people have already picked Washington, and three quarters have already picked Oregon. So, or UCLA, you could pick them, but they could get knocked out by Stanford. So anyway, thanks, Matthew, for compiling all of that. Only 40 people left.
Matthew's the man.
Is awesome stuff. Okay, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll try to do some questions. Back in a minute. All righty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. We got a couple of voicemails. Do you want to do these?
Sure.
All right, first one.
The NIL deals are rolling in. Are they blinged out watches or sunglasses? No, they are not. Rumor has it the NIL deals are coming in are skateboard companies. Because Troy Taylor and company, they're going to need skateboards just to carry around their giant balls after that second half and the overtime. That's right. The skateboard deals are coming, boys. Wow. And all I can say, I know your hearts are probably heavy today for the Big Ten contingency. I mean, of course, the Pac-12 couldn't just get through a season of just looking like the conference of champions. Watch it burn.
So he might have left a first voicemail that was like 3 minutes, but it said no transcript, so I didn't even bother with that one. This sounds like we just got the end.
I actually prefer it this way.
That we just got the end of the Zodiac Killer.
Because we got the Zodiac Killer going crazy.
I can't believe he waited for Stanford to win to call in. We thought we could hear from him at some point. Great one from the Zodiac Killer.
That's pretty good. Do you want to do the other one?
Yeah, let's do the other one.
Hey, Brian and Steve. Trevor here. So it was a pretty slow week in the Pac-12. Certainly no major games. And, you know, my Trojans certainly had nothing of note happen on Saturday. I didn't even catch the game. I'm sure the offense did great. Hope we won. But because of that, I thought maybe you guys would have some time this week to do a new rankings. You know, last week you ranked Pac-12 coaches based on how stupid they are. But also during that episode, Ryan really gushed about Marcus Freeman's face and how impressive it is. And so I thought maybe you guys could tie those two topics together and give us all a ranking of Pac-12 coaches based on how attractive they are.
Oh.
I'll leave the rankings to you guys. You're the experts. But if I may, just a couple quick thoughts. To me, there's a clear number one, and it's Kyle Whittingham, just a true silver fox, especially since he grew the hair out. The flowing locks just really put it over the top. After Witt, I think you could make a case for Wilcox as an attractive guy. I mean, he's got a bit of a bird of prey look to him, but I think you put him in a nice suit and have him walk into a restaurant, I bet some heads will turn. After those two, just a bunch of NPCs, mediocre-looking guys.
NPCs.
Although I will say, bringing up the rear, and I hate to say it, Dave, but Chip kind of has that whole Winnie the Pooh vibe going on, which, you know, I'm sure some people are into different strokes and all, but just not really aesthetically pleasing to me. So, but anyway. You guys are, like I said, the experts, so I'd love to hear your rankings, and yeah, since it's a slow week, figure you'll have some time, and really, I just want to give Dave as little time as possible to talk about USC this week. All right, thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks.
I love that. Okay, clear number one, I think we all agree, is Kyle Whittingham.
You could put Wilcox up there, too.
Yeah, I think I would go Whittingham. Wilcox is a little too much of a dead-eyed killer to me.
Okay.
But he's probably number two. All right, let me get a clean visual of Kalen DeBoer's face.
I think he's okay.
He's got kind of that, like, gruff, you know, square jawed kind of guy. I think you talked me into DeBoer number three. Not Dillingham, not Troy Taylor.
Deion. We could do Deion.
Deion's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can go Deion number three or four. Jake Dickert is just kind of a, again, speaking
probably
to
probably lower half.
He's an NPC. Chip,
probably Riley. I think probably Riley after.
No, Riley's kind of got a. He's got kind of a small face.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird kind of. I don't know.
So you go Whittingham.
I don't know. The rest of everyone else is just kind of in a...
I like the NPC.
I like calling them NPCs. I think that's right. I don't know if there's like a true, like, hideous one in there. I don't think Troy Taylor is a very good-looking guy. Let me get a...
Not super...
Yeah, I think I'd go Troy Taylor Dickert's, actually last.
Dickert's not bad. Like, I got Dickert. Like, he's okay.
You're into Dickert?
Dillingham just... It's something a little weird about it. I don't know.
I don't know if it's just knowing how much of a nutcase he is.
Jonathan Smith.
Lan Danning is pretty good.
Yeah, he's got like a weird tattoo and stuff.
Yeah, but he's like kind of got that.
I got the picture of him with the cigar.
Yeah, he's got that like kind of Southern frat boy thing going on.
Yeah, there's definitely something. Okay, there's a little weird vibe there.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Dillingham looks like he's just too intense to be attractive, you know?
Yeah.
And Jonathan Smith is pure NPC. Like, he even looks like he was drawn by a computer game animator.
By AI.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, we don't have a true ranking because I think we agree with you that that's pretty much NPCs after the first two or three.
Yeah.
All right.
Where's Judd Fish? Where you got Judd Fish at?
Middle of the pack.
Middle. Okay.
He's at least interesting looking.
He is.
Like, there's at least some character to his face.
It tells a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bushy hair.
All right. This is from Kenny.
Okay.
Hey, guys. I have two quick questions for you. One, which top half Pac-12 teams have you been most or least impressed by so far this year? So who's in the top half anymore of our power rankings?
Yeah, well, I guess we could do that.
Most impressed by Arizona. Least impressed by... Well, USC is not in the top half anymore. UCLA.
Yeah, you could do that.
There we go. All right, and then two, which bottom half Pac-12 team do you think should be the most excited about their future?
I think USC is 4-0 in conference. They could be pretty excited, potentially.
You're high. Colorado?
They're in the bottom half of the conference, and they're excited about their future.
Well, I mean, as a proof of concept, this year's already a success for Colorado. ASU? No. I think it's Colorado in the bottom half.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right.
I could go.
I've been listening to the pod for about a year. Keep up the great work and bear down. All the best, Kenny. P.S. Jed Fish's decision-making makes me want to gouge my eyes out, and David's explanation of the traumatic brain injury at halftime of the USC game makes complete sense.
Yeah. Well, they went on crushed Washington State after that. So, Brian, wow, and Fridays. Brian from Livermore, Northern California for you L.A. homers. Love you, no lie, to be honest. They were Whoa, this is a weird spelling of ferocious. They were ferocious. Both teams, Ducks boat raced in Stanford and Colorado, held both to 6 total points. Made sure they kept it entertaining Friday, and yet Coach Prime is still, quote, hot garbage. Is it that the Ducks defense is that good, or that both of these teams are so bad that they define the bottom of a non-existent league and deserve relegation to the Mountain West merger? Regards from Brian.
Interesting.
Again, after this is before. This is ferocious.
Ferocious.
Yeah, this was right after the game, right? This was.
I think it was after the Friday game. Yes.
Yeah. I think Stanford and Colorado are two different versions of bad. Colorado is clearly a cut above, even with the result of the game being what it is. Their offense is a very good unit. I don't think Stanford has a very good unit. But yeah, I mean, I think Oregon's really good. Like I said, I thought like on balance, they actually outplayed Washington. But you know, those three kind of critical plays didn't go their way.
I mean, Washington was in control, and then the offense stopped, you know?
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, that was pretty evenly played.
They weren't in control with like 4 minutes to go in the game.
They were by 11, and then they just couldn't move the ball.
Yeah.
But Oregon did a great job with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, Colorado and Stanford, two different versions of bad. Ooh, Thomas, a long one.
Oh, boy.
Long boy. All right.
Remember, Thomas, we've talked about this.
Through the looking glass. Hey, guys, my smoke alarm mysteriously went off late Friday night. I couldn't figure out why until I looked at the TV and saw black plumes of smoke emanating from the burning hulk of a freighter that is the 2023 Colorado Buffaloes. Wow. Frantically, I searched for answers. Certainly the Zodiac Killer had struck again, I thought, gleefully reappearing on Friday the 13th to help to run the SS Louis Vuitton aground. While waiting for forensic results to come back, I came across a tweet from Wilner about Colorado and Stanford being polar opposites and how much they rely on the transfer portal. Coach Prime brought in over 50 new players in the offseason, John noted, while the farm added only 5. People tend to give Stanford a lot of crap because of their academic standards are so high, reportedly, that it limits the number of players in the portal who could gain admission. It's unclear how many of these critics realize, too, that the Cardinal always had refused to let high school recruits enroll in school early. The first athlete to be granted an exception, as luck would have it, was current Stanford quarterback Ari Patu in 2022. Naturally, this got me thinking. What would FBS team rosters look like in the NIL era if the early signing period didn't exist? Would the transfer portal become even more influential and disruptive? Or would things evolve into something closer to an NFL-like free agency window? What do you think about any of that, Ryan?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I need this to be more concise.
I don't think the early signing period actually plays much of a role at all.
I don't need every email to tell me a story. I need it to like ask me a question or...
You don't like a story?
I don't like spinning some yarn. I just get confused.
I just get to hear the sound of my own voice, which is
true.
My favorite activity.
I've asked you, Thomas, concise. I'm not trying to be a dick here. this is, there's too, it's too broad of a picture all the time. And like it's this poetic, give me something concise. We got to dial it in a little bit.
Well, I got to finish his email.
Okay.
Not that you asked, but the only way I think sanity can be restored is to restrict the early signing period to those players enrolling at their chosen school in January. Not only would this be a better solution academically, but it would also align closer to the NFL, where teams decide on signing players already in the league before drafting new ones. Would love to hear both of your thoughts on this, as well as any recommendations on where to buy the most authentic Big Ten bratwurst. Keep it milquetoast, Thomas.
I don't know where the best bratwurst would be. I'm guessing like Wisconsin.
Maybe.
Probably up there. There's probably some good bratwursts across.
All right, let's,
Penn State. There's like a lot of like Polish, you know, people.
Let's get to another email.
All right, we got it. Yeah, because we got a lot of.
We got to move.
Okay, Dylan from Albuquerque. Boys, what a game! Land Danning decided to go for it and fails on the last drive, setting up, dare I say, the two pump peeling Penix drive for the win. Get it? They scored in two plays. Mm-hmm. The real question is, Land Danning the most arrogant coach in the conference? Twice he passes on field goal attempts in the red zone that could have won if he just takes the points. Serves him right. They miss the field goal at the end.
I don't think it's arrogance. I think it's the smart math play. But he is calling bad plays. So
yeah,
maybe there's some blame there. All right. This is from Ethan in Washington, D.C. Coach Brain, fellas, two questions for the pod. These questions are mainly for Irv, but Ryan, feel free to chime in as well. It's been another week of piano dropping on heads for coaches. First, you have Coach Prime punting the ball on the 40 with a chance to win the game. And now I just watched Chip Kelly take a timeout down two scores with 6 minutes to go on offense. A timeout he most certainly was going to need, notwithstanding the sack that Dante Moore took. Why is the average millennial who plays Madden better at clock game management than coaches who make millions of dollars? You literally could hire any general Madden / NCAA player off the street who could do this stuff better. It boggles my mind. Ethan, it's a joking point, but I've often thought this, and I think some staffs even have this. You need somebody who's not your like football brain coach guy to make analytical decisions on your staff. Maybe Dan Lanning has this. I don't know, because they're generally making the smart math play. But there were basics in this game that were screwed up by UCLA that would be, they would be benefited by just having somebody who's like obviously a sports person, but gets the statistical side really, really well.
Yeah.
Because there is, it's not like baseball where it's all math at a certain level, but there is a big math component to football that is still getting missed even in this revolution. Like, how many years ago was it where we read about the like Alabama high school where they go for it on every kicking opportunity? And that seemed to spark a little something in some, but it's taken so long.
Someone hired that guy and then they had to fire him. Like he was terrible.
Well, because it's what he was doing was arguably ridiculous. But there's this, and it's a middle ground that is much more that way than the way it has been forever, where you punt on like, you know, fourth and three from the opposing side's 38. But yeah, more coaches need help on this.
Yeah.
Second question. Ethan Garbers, not to be confused with his older, more revered brother, has to be redshirting, right? Dante Moore plays an awful game, throws three bad picks, and Garbers doesn't even get a snap? Like, I get that theoretically Dante brings some intangibles like touch on deep balls, but Garbers isn't going to throw the bad picks and take sacks on fourth down, is he? Anyway, it seems like Garbers was honestly only given two drives to prove himself in the Coastal game, while the leash that Kelly has for Moore seems infinite. Anyway, keep it mediocre. Appreciate the work you put in, Ryan. Yeah, I'm kind of with you at this point, Ethan. I think Ethan had it in his head that he was going to redshirt. I don't know. I mean, at this point, I don't think Dante should be thrown out there again. I think it's not quite throwing him to the wolves, but it's putting him in a bad spot along with your offense. And I think they need another option. Now, I don't know, for Garber's point of view, whether he wants to or whether he wants to sit out the year and transfer. But at this point, yeah, I mean, I think you've got to take a longer look at all your options again if you're Chip Kelly.
We got one from Brian. Those LA schools, man, what a great week of coaching by Jim Moore and Clay Helton in LA. I mean, Notre Dame always gives Helton's USC teams fits. I'm sure just one more year of recruiting and Clancy Pendergast will fix that defense. And a tough week for Jim Moore, too. I mean, UCLA's five star freshman must have spent too much time in the hot tub in the dorm room, right? Well, that was Lincoln Riley coaching USC and Chip Kelly coaching UCLA. Well, good thing those schools upgrade their coaches. Go Utes, and screw the Pac-12 refs for the worst targeted call I've ever seen against Cole Bishop on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, it was not a good week for our our.
I don't know why they didn't overturn it. Like the, oh, I'm sorry, the Cole Bishop.
Yeah, targeting. The Cole Bishop one was bad. That should not have been targeting, and I don't know why they didn't overturn.
I guess because of the Utah president, like basically sunk the Pac-12 with his $50 million valuation. Maybe that's why.
Maybe, maybe.
Screwed him.
All right, this is from Ryan from Dana Point. Bo Nur. That's B-O space mm-hmm. Nur.
Okay.
Please help me understand the Bo Nix hype. His completion percentage seems mostly based on that they don't allow him to throw more than 3 yards down the field, except for the occasional moon balls. He has big stats, and maybe it's because I've only watched a handful of his Oregon games, but he looks like a yield rather than a catalyst. Wow, look at that. Stripping aside the Oregon brand, is he really that good? Bucky is who appears to stir that drink.
Bucky's very good.
And I think Bo Nix is really good.
Yeah, I mean...
I think he's a lesser version of the other quarterbacks that are in the league. I don't think he's a true Heisman contender.
No.
But in terms of managing that offense. And remember, last year it was not all the same Dinkin Duncan from in the Kenny Dillingham offense.
It's a little more of that this year.
A little bit more that I think he's doing two different things in the back-to-back years. So I do think he's a different type of player. I think they should be running him more. That'd be my one note. I'd like to see him with the ball in his hands running it. But he's just a different type of quarterback. How do you rank the Pac-12 quarterbacks this year?
Oh, overall?
Penix, number one. All right, let's do them.
Probably Penix, Caleb.
Penix, probably Caleb.
Go Bo. Or
I'd probably go Bo just because the other situations have been so chaotic.
DJ?
DJ's probably up there too.
The pain
they're probably like tied. They're clearly less than Penix and Williams, but they're probably right there.
Shador.
Shador's up there, but he's taken too many bad sacks, making some bad decisions. Yeah. So he's probably fifth. Cam Ward was up there, but he's had two really bad weeks in a row.
Noah Fifita.
You could talk me into him at number six right now.
There's places like Stanford, you're not sure what to do.
Cal, you're not sure what to do. Utah, you can't do anything.
Mendoza's only played like a game and a half.
UCLA's gotten a lot of Dante Moore, and he hasn't been good since the non-conference. So it's not really – there's not really many options. I think it's like six with kind of settled situations at this point, maybe seven. And the rest are just kind of a mess. So it's really more of a top seven than it is a true top 12.
Yeah.
Okay. Was and then always enjoyable to see the sweatshop beneficiaries lose. That would be Oregon. Lan Danning looks like he has a closet full of affliction shirts, especially when they wear uniforms that look like pigeon shit. Wow. What a little grace note to end that email on.
Nice. Okay. Let's see. This is a text message we got. Hey guys, what do you think has changed for DJ over the past couple of games? He seems way more comfortable setting his feet and not overthrowing balls. Is it just getting comfortable with the system or Smith's development? Just curious because he looks way better than he did against Washington State.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I think they are maybe doing slightly different things with him where they're trying to establish the run more and not necessarily throwing it as much with him as like first option. But I don't know if he's just getting more comfortable in the system. That happens a lot. Guys just don't look quite right. Now he's got a few games of Pac-12 play through, and he looks a lot better. I mean, it could be as simple as that, but the DJ I saw against UCLA was a very different DJ than I remember seeing at Clemson and also even in the first few games of this year. The big thing I would say is the question there is still, how does he perform under, you know, literal pressure? UCLA wasn't able to get pressure because Oregon State's offensive line played really, really well. They picked up blitzes really well. They handled Leatu Latu and the Murphys on the edges well. But how many teams are actually equipped to pressure them if UCLA wasn't able to do it? Utah was able to, but that could have just been a bad game, one-off. USC, maybe, you know, and maybe they can give a different type of pressure where it's straight up the middle. But
they don't play USC, but...
Yeah, that's right. That's true. So Oregon... Maybe.
Yeah, I think Oregon can.
Oregon might be able to. But anyway, I think he's had a really nice year.
Yeah, I was never as down on him as some people, especially my co-host. I'm not sure why. but reading the article that Bruce wrote about him and Clemson, it just seemed like system-wise it wasn't a great fit. And then, it's going to take a little bit of time. But I didn't just think he was going to be bad. I thought he'd be pretty good. And he's playing a lot better now. So Even after he threw five touchdowns, you were like, yeah, he sucks. And then like, okay, he doesn't suck anymore. So good for DJ. Glad to see him doing well. Southern California kid. Are you next? Or is it me?
I think I'm next. Okay. This is from Rufus. Week 6 fallout. This should probably be close to our last one.
Okay, that's fine.
Patrick and Irving. Friday the 13th seemed to usher in a very interesting week. I have some questions. Have you ever seen a collapse like Colorado's? Prime was smug mugging for the cameras at halftime, only to literally be being able to fry an egg on his dome at the end. What's up with Stanford being able to turn it on like that?
That was a weird one. Like, you give up a huge play, momentum, and then huge plays kept coming, and it just was like, I don't know, man. That was like, you just never see anything like that before. That was just one of the biggest collapses. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, that was a horrible, horrific collapse. What happened in the Palouse? Is Arizona that good, or did the Cougs totally shit the bed? We kind of recap these games. This shouldn't be our last email. Here, I'm going to read one from Kirk. That was just notes about the games.
Okay.
5-star Dante Moore. Hypothetical for you guys. If Bo Nix had left at the end of last season to attempt to land a job in the NFL as most expected, presumably Oregon 5-star quarterback commit Dante Moore would have stuck to his commitment and been in Duck this season. Do you think he would have won the starting job for the Ducks? And if so, would he be playing at a higher level than he is at UCLA? After 6 games with Chip's baffling play calling, Dante is simply not doing well at all, looking like he has lost self-confidence and lost much of the confidence his teammates may have had in him. Love the pod.
I don't know what the other quarterback situation is there, but I mean, Oregon's big in recruiting. Play your 5-star guy. Like, I could see him getting a start. I don't know. Do you think he would?
I don't know. I mean, I could see him having started beginning of the year. I don't know if his problems are systemic across the board, or if it's just related to, you know, whatever UCLA is trying to do with him. Honestly, I don't think Oregon's offensive scheme with what they're doing with Bo Nix is a great fit for Dante Moore. He is kind of deep shots, accuracy downfield, not really like
not,
dumping, yeah. You know, little dump offs to the running backs, little dump offs to the slot receivers. So I don't know. I think he might have run into some of the same issues, but Oregon probably has a better offensive line, probably has better surrounding parts, so it probably wouldn't look as bad as what UCLA is dealing with right now.
Jim says Moore would not have started at Oregon, so yeah. He doesn't feel that he would. Okay, cool stuff. We still have some questions after. We'll try to get to them in our next show. We'll do Thursday morning preview.
That's our plan.
To do that, we'll preview not as big of a slate of games this week, so we'll have some buys and, you know, four teams on buys this week. So, but good stuff. David Woods, thanks for coming in. A lot of fun.
Beautiful.
You're ready. You're still alive. You got to do your picks for the survivor pool. There's
That's
like 40
right,
left.
That's right.
You can try to win. I cannot believe Colorado collapsed there.
It's amazing.
Very Stanford-y. All right. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.